What does mindfulness and meditation have to do with hospitality, restaurants, and service? For Stefan Ravalli, the answer is everything. After digging deep into the service world through bartending and craft cocktails, Stefan slowly found himself being invited to more. More than just performance, more than just entertainment, more than just making good drinks. A journey of exploration that took him literally around the globe and deep into studying meditation practice eventually brought him back full circle to service as a test lab and practice space for mindfulness. Not only that, but he's come to discover that the best service comes through full presence and involves pure action in the moment, which we explore in this conversation. Stefan today is still in service and also works to help other service professionals and service-minded people through his project and podcast called Serve Conscious. I really enjoyed my conversation with Stefan. I love everything that he's doing, and I love the way he talks about mindfulness and work. I particularly love the conversation we had about work and knowing when to stay when it's hard to stay. I think you'll really enjoy our conversation as well. And I feel like no matter where you are in your work journey, no matter what you're doing in your work and in your career, there are things in this conversation that you can apply right away, and I hope you will. The Meaning Movement Podcast, a show about work worth doing. I'm your host, Dan Cumberland, today with service professional, mindfulness teacher, blogger, and podcaster, Stefan Ravalli. Stay with us. This episode of the Meaning Movement Podcast is brought to you by my ebook, The Calling Process. Everybody wants a dream job, but would you know it if you saw it? Too often, the conversation about work and passion is limited to inspirational quotes and dull advice. I wanted to reframe that conversation, so I created this book. It's not about a personality test. It's not about networking. It's a book to help you understand who you are and what makes you feel alive and engaged when it comes to the work that you do. I released this book about 2 years ago. I'm bringing it back up today because I bet you haven't read it. And if you have, I bet you haven't left a review for it on Amazon, and I would love for you to do so. Here's the great part. It's free right now over at Amazon. Just go to themeaningmovement.com/callingprocess, and it'll take you there, or just search for it on amazon.com. Download it, read it, and please take action on it. This stuff works, but not without a little elbow grease. After you read it, I want to hear your thoughts on it. So leave a review. I would really appreciate it. And I'll even send you a little gift in the mail. Now back to the show. Stefan, thank you so much for joining me. Welcome to the Meaning Movement Podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
We've connected a fair amount already. Before recording this, I got the great privilege of being on your podcast, which I'll make sure to link up in the show notes here if people want to follow along and hear more from the two of us together. But I'm so excited to turn the tables, have you on the show with me here today. So a question I'd like to begin with is, how do you begin to talk about what you do in the world?
Yeah, I guess I'm one of those unusual people that consider hospitality work to be full of like meaning and possibility. Because, you know, so many, it's a disposable job. Mm. But when I found my place, like really found my place in the food and beverage industry, I was all in. And it took me a while, but I eventually found that hospitality work, when done like consciously, mindfully, it involves the cultivation of skill sets that are so fundamental that they provide you with like this mindset that can translate into success in any industry and any like realm of personal life too. Yeah. And yeah, that's the short of it.
I love it. So hospitality broadly, you know, food and beverage specifically. So like bartending, waiting tables, like what other, are there other kind of subcategories there that people should be thinking about when we're talking about these terms?
Yeah. And I guess like, I guess it doesn't have to be limited to like restaurants and bars. That's just my background. Yeah,
totally.
You know, and all of the moving parts that involve, you know, guest experience stuff,
yeah,
you
guest
know,
experience. Like, I love that word. Like,
yeah, totally. Host and hostess is actually a really sort of, often in that industry, neglected job, actually, because it's literally the person that, like, you know, catches and cradles the guest and makes them feel welcome and safe, you know, and attended to. Uh-huh. And often they don't put someone who's really skillful and masterful in that position.
Totally.
And that completely affects the entire evening. And it's often I have to clean up their work as
totally.
A server.
And so I'm filtering this, and I will probably continue to filter all of this conversation about this stuff through my experience in the food and beverage industry. Spent a few years at I was going to say high-end pizza joint, but that sounds like a paradox, if you will, or like it shouldn't exist. But it is, as far as pizza goes, at least in Seattle where I live, it's at the top of the experience. But everything you're saying rings exactly true. The host or hostess position is kind of the entry level to the front of house, which usually came without much guidance. But it really is kind of that first touch point to someone's experience of a restaurant and of the hospitality, you know, experience within that restaurant. I'm curious, how did you get into hospitality? I know for me, again, my experience, it was a way to pay the bills with a schedule that was, you know, somewhat flexible while I was in grad school and for a little bit of time after grad school. But what's interesting is a lot of, I think for a lot of folks, restaurant and hospitality work is seen as kind of a, you know, a stepping stone towards something else. But for you, it feels like it's become like, this is your thing. And I'm just curious about how that's gone for you and how have you ended up here?
Yeah. So hospitality, almost from the very beginning, had this like magic and mystique to it, even though my relationship to it wasn't very like healthy. But it really was for me like this beacon I reached out to as this sort of means of becoming a better person, more of what I was struggled with. So like I started out as this like artsy kind of like intellectual kid, you know. I had a lot of trouble actually being like a human being and interfacing with other human beings, and my education didn't help with that. I started by studying psychology, but then I quickly found myself attracted to film theory and minoring in cultural studies, which, as Mark Maron calls it, that's like basically a degree in having a conversation. So it's not very financially useful.
Yeah.
But actually it made conversation more difficult for me because with my kind of like really intense mind and this sort of natural social awkwardness, I kind of filled myself with information and opinions that I did not know how to like actually interface with actual living, breathing human beings. And the art of, you know, the art of service, when I got into the service world and the sort of obligation of it forced me to like kind of get out of my shell and sort of more smoothly, you know, interact with and attend to others.
Yeah.
So I got into this and I was fortunate early on to kind of encounter some sort of senior professionals who also took it really seriously and mentored me. And these guys were craft bartenders.
Cool.
Which is a different kind of league of bartender, as many have been experiencing now. This has been going on for about 20 years, this sort of movement of bartending as this this sort of art, this culinary art, also this like, you know, this academic profession. You're studying and studying, you're studying history, you're studying spirits, you're studying gastronomy, you're a curator, you know, plus you're a host, plus you're a craftsman. Like there's just so much to it. And I got really, really enchanted by that. And I went full throttle on this path of mastering bartending. And it wasn't, you know, it was very performative. I really enjoyed it. It was a big self-esteem boost. Like as someone like writing scripts and like film like reviews and stuff out of university, I was like, I don't know, just in a dungeon the whole time, you know, like working on something, and like maybe I'd work on a script for a year and then it just wouldn't get made because it wasn't, you know, and it wasn't good enough. And I was just discouraged. Like in bartending, like you can like you make something that is art and you're like dazzling someone right in front of you and you give it to someone. They're like, you're awesome. And I'm like, yay, dopamine boost, you know, and it's all instant gratification. And so it was really hard to pull away from that. But like, here's the thing. So like later I discovered Japanese bartending, and the Japanese bartenders took this kind of craft bartending path in a different direction, where it wasn't so much about like performing and like impressing people. In fact, it was contra that, because it's actually a Zen practice in Japan, or at least inspired by Chadao, Japanese tea ceremony, which is a Zen practice. So it's not about showing off. It's not about your ego at all, actually. It's hospitality is the focus, you know, being present and wholly invested in the needs of the guest and only the guest. And their hospitality is legendary in great Japanese bars. Hospitality was never my focus. I guess like being like impressive or interesting or witty or like something like that, I guess that was my idea of mastering it. But I didn't care who was watching or what their needs might actually be. I was an artist. Like if you don't like what I made you, then get with it, you know, get outside of your box, you know, kind of like a film, like as a film student, I was acting exactly like I was as a film student. You don't like 2001 Space Odyssey? Well, that's just because you're a drone conditioned by the Hollywood formula, you know, like watch it again. You'll see that it's the best film ever made. You know, I was just like a grumpy artist again.
Yeah.
And I was fine alienating people because I thought they were dumb and I was smart. And so here I was in a profession that was supposed to connect me with humanity. And I found another buffer, you know, I got so buried in the art and form of its material stuff, you know, that I just, you know, found a way to alienate myself again. So here I was, you know, like, so the big transition was firstly, like working with and maybe like encountering or meeting bartenders who were really, really like mature and had been doing it a while. And maybe we're outside of the craft movement, and they would say things like, so if you're not making people happy, then what is the point? And like statements like that were terrifying for me, because I was like, I don't know how to make people happy. I just know how to like I just know how to please myself. Through my work, you know? So in combination with studying like this whole other culture of bartending and finding it like kind of like mysterious and fascinating, and I not even knowing how to apply it, I started traveling the world bartending, and I was running bars sometimes and just generally seeking more knowledge, more skills, more answers. And I still wasn't happy. I wasn't fulfilled. And as a result, I couldn't, you know, make others happy, which is the whole hospitality imperative that I, you know, was learning. So eventually I met a meditation teacher when I was working in Australia, Johnny Pollard, who's awesome. I had him on my show, and he was like, you know, this person, and you're in his presence and you're just like, wow, like this person really, like he just looks at you and you know, he's seeing the best parts of you. And I was like, I know I don't know how to do that. Because I'm too wrapped up in myself. And I'd like to, though. I think I'd be a better professional and a better person.
Yeah.
And so I was like, teach me meditation, please. And he did. And it was at that moment that I realized that none of the skills and tricks and wit and performative stuff that I'd been sharpening for all these years mattered if I wasn't working on myself. My whole mental, emotional, and physical health, which I was doing nothing in the service of. I was just working against it. I was drinking all the time. I was just, you know, eating badly and, you know, doing the typical like rock star cool thing of like, who cares about, you know, my like my body and well-being, you know? So then I started meditating and I ran with it. I meditated every day. I stopped drinking. I ate right. I did yoga. Actually, from this meditation practice, I suddenly stopped wanting alcohol after 6 weeks. I was like looking at a bottle and being like, ooh, why? I feel like alive and fresh and clear. Why would I want to distract myself from that? And I put down the bottle and I never picked it up again.
Wow.
And my relationship to my work and the people around me definitely started transforming. But it was weird, though, because at the same time, the luster of bartending started to fade. And that's not, you know, actually what was happening, but my relationship to my work was being revealed as unhealthy.
Yeah.
Because I was doing it simply to impress myself. But I started to not need to prove as much to myself because I started becoming more settled in myself, you know?
Yeah.
So I just was at the time feeling done with needing to like keep propelling myself forward as a bartender. So I became really kind of restless doing that and realized it was time to start maybe teaching. So I fled again, as I always did. I went to India. I spent like 6 months there. I learned to be a meditation teacher.
Wow.
Living in like the Himalayan foothills. And after I was done being a meditation teacher, I wandered India a bit. I did a bit of teaching, but also just kind of exploring. And I met a lady who I would later marry, actually. And awesome. she's from here, where we live in Miami.
Cool.
And she turned me on to tea ceremony. And I followed her to Taiwan and met her teacher, Wuda, and this monk who practices mindfulness and Zen through tea ceremony. And that gave me a connection to like the raw material of Japanese bartending and like true mindful service. And so I got really into this stuff, and I was teaching this stuff exclusively for like 4 years. And it was really nice and really inspiring and safe and sweet, but it was too safe.
Yeah.
So I began to have this itch to get back into hospitality or somewhere, but like I knew it had to be hospitality because I needed to see how I did as someone who was really working on myself now.
Yeah.
In an environment where it's really hard to act like someone that actually meditates, you know, to maintain all like the calm and bliss and inspiration and, you know, general presence consistently. So I got a job at a restaurant. I just served, no bartending, no tricks, you know, no fancy business, just serving, which I'm not even that good at, actually. Like, I mean, like without all my tools, you know,
without the costume.
yeah, totally. But I got the hang of it. And actually, it didn't matter. I was like really loved as a server because I was just showing up really in the role and treating it like also like a spiritual practice.
Yeah.
And this is actually known as karma yoga. This is the yoga of action, which is something I had learned and really wanted to like find an arena to test. And actually, you don't have to find an arena to test it. You can do it anywhere.
Yeah.
But I realized service is a really good one because it's really challenging to do like, you know, like pure action that you are purely in service of the moment and the needs of the moment without need of anything back. That's karma yoga. It's like the art of service. And I was like, wow, hospitality is a phenomenal arena. Because in the beginning, everything was compartmentalized. Like I was meditating over here and trying to work on this like fulfilled mindful life. And then I was like working this hospitality job over here, which was this crappy, unfulfilling thing that meditation made more survivable. But then it was here that I realized that it's all one continuum. This is where the work on myself is done as well. This is also like a mindful practice that nourishes me, you know, with the right like mentality, it nourishes me. So I realized since I love teaching, I had discovered such a love for it that this all needed to be channeled into a project. So I started Surf Conscious, and that's where I'm just simply, you know, teaching using these like field reports of like mindfulness in action, using my knowledge of hospitality and developing these skills and how they are actually mindfulness skills that will better you as a person and make you live a happier, healthier life and kind of putting it all together. You know, it's hospitality is mindfulness. That's the whole campaign now.
Wow. Love
it. That's where we're at.
I love it. What a journey and what a transformation it seems like from, you know, I guess, you know, where you started talking about just how you didn't know how to be with people, didn't know how to talk to people, to really like, I don't know, like just, I'm just imagining you, you know, in your dark basement reviewing film to like being fully present in service of the moment in the presence of strangers. Like it's just a huge personal transformation that you've been through.
Yeah. Yeah. And now I love people, but like, especially when I don't love them, like, especially when they bother me, because there's so much in me that still gets triggered. And there's so much like still like self-righteousness and like holier than thou that's there, because it's all, you know, the mind will do that.
Yeah.
But like when I'm really connected to the service imperative, it keeps me like loving that person in that moment, even though I'm getting triggered. And actually it loves the triggers because I learned so much about myself in that moment. Like every time I run into an obstacle of being like a good hospitality person,
yeah,
I know that there's transformation like right on the other side of it. Like yeah. every service in little ways, every day in this stupid looking gritty little job, there is so much possibility, you know, for me to learn and grow. And so that's the whole campaign, to share that with others and inspire them to do the same, because it's really simple to do that, you know?
So when you get a customer who's just really, annoying, I guess, for lack of a better word, just a problem customer, I guess.
Yeah.
And they're just getting under your skin. You know, you can't seem to make them happy. It feels like you just keep screwing up. Like, where do you go?
Yeah, situation dependent, but let's say that there are a lot of possibilities that are not simply considering them an inconvenience. That's the first thing.
Uh-huh.
And knowing that I have like a choice on how to look at it.
Yep.
Right. So
like they're not the problem, right?
They're not the problem. They're an opportunity.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they're not an inconvenience. Mm-hmm. An inconvenience suggests I need things to go a certain way. Mm. And I don't.
Mm.
That's not service.
Yeah.
Service is the needs of the moment. So here's the needs of the moment. This person, you know, and their perceived difficulty they're creating, right? Yep. Because their priorities are different than mine. So then I think about their priorities. I think about like, what needs are they expressing, even though they're not maybe communicating it in a good way. And so I'll address it and just address their needs like in that moment. So this is what you're saying you need. All right. You could be like talking down to me. You could be like, campaigning against the professionalism of the restaurant and myself. Mm. That's fine. And I'm not going to validate that. I'm going to validate your needs and you'll thank me for it later because I'm going to penetrate through all the noise. I'll let you vent it. Sure.
Yeah.
And I'll penetrate through it and say, okay, what are you really saying? You're saying you need this? Not a problem. Sorry, we missed that. You know, actually, I won't even say not a problem, actually, because that's not good hospitality language. You're not even supposed to imply that it's a problem.
Mm.
Oh, happy to help you with that. Absolutely. Glad we discovered what you need and what we might have missed, you know, and the enthusiasm. Now, that's like the outward expression. The inward experience, it could be a lot of different options. If someone's being really intense, I might look at them as you would look at a child, because children can act like that, but they're non-threatening. And why do adults have to be threatening?
Yeah.
You know, there's no reason for that. And actually, when they are getting that angry, it truly is, you know, a certain childlike motives within them, you know, or unresolved childhood issues actually that they're bringing to the situation. And so when I do that, it's not to look down on them, but it's to have compassion, you know, for their vulnerability in that moment.
Yeah.
And know that it is about whatever it is, their whole legacy of difficulty that they've brought to that moment, that they're just resolving there, and it has nothing to do with me. It's just now me in front of it.
Yep.
And my imperative is to accept it and actually to accept them as they are. And be that person that does when they probably don't have that in their life as much as they want it.
Mm.
And that'll disarm them. And so I'll look at them and I'll see like the innocence in them because it is there, even if they're like an oil baron, you know, and I'll see what is good about them. And when you do that, it will, without even them knowing I'm doing it, it'll disarm them.
Mm.
At least as much as possible. If the situation can be saved.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it. I love it. It's so good. It's so good. And so much. I just love that, that stance, that posture, I guess, that there's something to be learned, that there's something to be, that you can be taught in that moment, by doing that, by engaging with them in a way that's not about, you know, seeing them as a problem, seeing them as an issue, but as a person. A child, even with a need, it's beautiful. It's really beautiful.
It is, yeah. Yeah. And I really suck at it sometimes.
But sometimes you get it right, and those are good moments, I would guess.
Oh yeah, I fumble my way through these like really beautiful sounding like processes.
Yeah.
And I tell people it really is up to them doing it, no matter how much they suck at it. It is really on them to do that. and take responsibility for how a situation makes them feel too. Because if it's bothering me, that's not because of them. It's because of me.
That's so good. That's so good. Just as you were telling your story, I think I was struck by how global your journey has been, you know, that you've literally traveled the globe in search of I don't know, personal growth in one sense, maybe even in search, you know, maybe even searching for yourself in another sense. I don't, it's not really as much a question, just an observation of like what a diverse and wide breadth of experience you've had.
Yeah. And actually the hospitality world was a great opportunity to do that. Because it is, you know, like a universal, skill and need, you know, and it doesn't require you to speak another language a lot of the time too. It's English is like the lingua franca of hospitality. So, you can like go and work at a great restaurant and bar or hotel somewhere in the world, visa dependent and do that pretty easily. Yeah, it's what I felt I needed to do. And I needed to do it to realize that I didn't have to do it.
Can you say more about that? What do you say more about that? I'm curious.
Well, there's always this sense of like truth and revelation and like, you know, growth is like out there somewhere. And actually it happens when I teach people meditation. You know, they're like, I just want to go to like a monastery somewhere where I can just sit around and just like eat like really pure food and just like talk about really like high-minded things and just be at peace all the time. And, you know, in nature, feeding birds, it sounds great. And I'm like, no, it's that sounds pointless, actually. Do that to like regenerate and then get back out there. And go into really like unromantic environments, actually, you know, because all of that truth and understanding and revelation, it's all right here, right in front of you in your little like job that seems dull and uninspiring. It's all right there.
Wow.
You know?
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. And that like to extract yourself from the context also is in some ways to extract yourself from the meaning and the potential, you know, potential for growth and potential for, I don't know, you could call it enlightenment. You could call it, you know, personal growth. You could call it application of your personal work, but like the two have to go hand in hand. I love that.
Yeah, I mean, you need growth exactly is it, and not just for you, but the people you're interfacing with. So if you're out there, like, you know, in isolation, like working on yourself, I mean that means one person is benefiting, and that's you. And the world really doesn't need more monks. It's really not the time for it. You know, it's an interconnected time where people need to take, what they have to offer, you know, not necessarily spiritually, just like what you can offer to a moment to elevate it, in terms of what you've been, you know, learning and cultivating in yourself, all the wisdom, you know, of your life. Yeah. And you need to bring it into the world. And you need to be like a covert operative in situations where you wouldn't expect to find, you know, someone who is conscious and mindful. And that's what I consider myself. I'm a covert operative, you know. You don't have to know. No one has to know that I teach meditation or that I have this project.
Yeah.
And I don't have to even like have a conversation about it. I just need to be the best version of myself, and that will elevate the situation, you know, myself included. I'll learn and I'll grow, and so will that person in front of me. And that's where the work can be done. It's not necessarily done in those situations. And and if you are going on like retreats and you are like loving spending a lot of time away in silence, then just it's really only given life and utility when you take it back into somewhere, and which is perhaps the last place you'd think to take it.
Totally. Well, and I think, you know, just to apply that, just one way that I think many listeners can apply, you know, some of this concept is, I think it's really easy for listeners to this podcast who are thinking about a job that they're in that they don't love, they want to make some sort of change. And it's really easy to idealize and say, well, you know, if only there was this certain kind of work that I could be doing that was just in many ways, as you describe, living at some monastery out in the woods, feeding birds and like just easy, I guess, to take all of the sticking points, the obstacles, the tension out of it. It's really easy to idealize something else. The grass is always greener as being a potential to fulfill or to create like this perfect experience, when maybe there is a transition for many folks that needs to happen, but there is no perfectly seamless, perfectly tension-free place to go. And if there was, it would be lacking something of the human experience. Would you agree?
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. I mean, I think we touched on this in our wonderful conversation like a month or two back. Yeah. Cause everyone thinks of like, oh, finding like meaning and finding like work that's fulfilling is somehow vaulting themselves out of the realms of discomfort. It's like the end of all challenges. Yeah. It's like, you know, and that actually to me sounds like stagnation. That to me sounds like worse than having work that's like challenging and dispiriting. At least you're like learning from the sort of difficulty.
Yeah.
But like, if you don't have any, if there's nothing difficult or unpleasant or, you know, even aspects that make you like question why you're doing it, if there isn't any of that tension, like you said, yeah, that's. I think that's far less valuable and dynamic of an opportunity to grow.
Yeah. Yeah. How would you, just to kind of continue to speak to those folks who might be in a similar place, how would you, I guess I'm wondering about the difference between like, this job is really hard and it's killing me, and this job is really hard. Like, I'm just curious if, right. Like how much tension is too much? How much struggle is too much? It's hard to talk about in abstract, but I'm curious.
Yeah,
your thoughts.
That's a really good question.
Yeah, do you understand what I'm saying? Like the at
absolutely.
What point? Yeah, at one point it becomes, you know, counterproductive.
Yeah. So like, I guess I'll preface this question in saying that I've been taught in like a you know, a wisdom tradition where it talks about finding like a path that serves you and always going to like the next place that is ideal for your evolution. Right.
Yeah.
But that does sometimes contend with the notion of appreciating exactly where you are, which is another spiritual virtue, you know, and they seem like they exist in contention with each other,
yeah.
You know? So like, yeah. So do I just like knuckle down and like confront all the difficulty? Or do I break out of this because it's no longer serving me? When do you know that? You know, and that does require, you know, some understanding of yourself, definitely. And because there is no like barometer that just says, oh, you're in the red zone, you know, evac, you know, because it is specific to the situation. And I've always kind of looked at that because, I mean, I was doing that kind of – I was on that path of like always looking for the next thing that's like a greater expansion of who I am. That mentality, though, can make you like a little too millennial-ish, you know, in like like, you know, the dabbler bounce around Rolling Stone that gathers no moss. And I was living like that for a while. Even before I was like meditating and stuff, that's what I was like, you know, always looking to the next thing. But so I'd say that's a pratfall. Of saying, because like this whole, like even in a spiritual community where I could say I'm like sort of part of, there tends to be an allergy to discomfort because there's this idea that if you're feeling discomfort, then that's somehow a sign that like it's not serving you.
Yeah.
But like sometimes the discomfort is exactly what's serving you.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, it's a super interesting question because I know that it's a question that many, many folks struggle with. Like, is it time for me to leave? Like, is this job just not the right fit, or is this job just hard?
Yeah.
I think that's kind of the way that question manifests for a lot of folks.
Yeah. And I think like a good thing to do is kind of like visualize a situation and say to yourself, how would things look if they were easy, right? If they were like totally fluid, frictionless, everything moving forward. And by easy, I mean, even when it's challenging, there is like an inner state of fluidity. Like, how would your life look? And then think the quickest way to get there. Would it be changing the circumstances or changing myself?
Yeah.
And often it's a simple shift in yourself.
Yep.
And really, actually, the best thing to do is always start with a shift in yourself.
Yeah.
In no longer ignoring, you know, the truth of your situation, of your reality. And when you do that, then you'll get a clearer picture of whether or not it's time to break out and jump into something totally new. Yeah. It always starts with self-knowledge, you know? As I teach with people with hospitality and service, it's an inside out job and nothing else.
Yeah.
It has to start from within.
I love it. Yeah, that's great. Great. And I love that, you know, it seems like you start with yourself and then let that dictate whether or not the external needs to change. Because if you're leading with that, then the rest, I'm not going to say the rest will fall into place. It's not that simple, but that maybe is the right barometer to go by.
Totally, yeah. And yeah. A simple, what I'm getting better at now, and that's a constant process of getting better at even just doing that and making that call. That is a skill in itself, you know. I'm getting better at looking at that. And it's often a question of looking at like, where my you know, attention is going and what it's yielding.
Yeah.
Because like, you know, it really is, not to sound mechanical, it is about efficiency, you know, it is about the energy you're investing, yielding maximum results for yourself and everyone around you. Mm. And for the longest time, I was just kind of spinning my wheels and investing too much energy into the wrong things. Mm. So paying attention to where your energy is going is a lifelong art to really, really, really pay attention to.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. I'm curious, just as you know, you reflect on your journey and the many moves professionally, vocationally, even geographically. I'm curious when you felt most stuck, and how you navigated those kinds of tension places. So, I mean, this is kind of still, you know, going along the same theme we've been ruminating on.
Yeah.
But I'm curious about, in your own story of if there's any particular moments that jump to mind how you navigated those kind of hard, unknown spaces.
The most stuck, probably, I would say, I was living in London, and London was supposed to be the mecca for me of like bartending knowledge and like, you know, also like, yeah, working at like really, really like high end places and everything. The craft of bartending is taken like really, really far in London. And I was working actually that both places I worked, I felt like really a lot of trouble. Like I had told you, finding inspiration in bartending, it was supposed to be like where I was really, really learning, but it was fading. My interest in it was fading. And I didn't know, like, that hunger and that drive to like always outdo myself and always grow and always learn that and like just really explode in this community as like a leader in it. That had all faded, and I was kind of left with like, what am I?
Yeah.
You know, what if I'm not a hospitality person, what am I? And I started feeling this like itch to like go back to school and I was like, how am I going to do that? I want to keep traveling and I want to keep bartending, but I'm not really getting what I used to get out of it. Mm. And then I was at this one Michelin star restaurant in London, beautiful restaurant, miserable, dreary environment, really dispiriting, but they were growing as a group. And I definitely did do my best with the job, but I just decided, guys, I'm done with you. I can't handle this. I can't handle how uninspiring this is. Mm. And so I quit. And then they offered me a job to run a speakeasy in Singapore and have like 20 staff under me upon quitting.
Wow.
and I was like, what? Okay. Let me think about that. And I was like, And something about it, because I just had such an attraction to like Asia, something about it seemed appealing, even though I'd kind of lost my faith in my like ability to be inspired by hospitality. Mm. But actually, I took this role and I went to Singapore and I was suddenly like full throttle, like all cylinders firing, really, really into bartending again. But that's because I was like leading a huge project.
Yeah.
And there was everything about me was tested aside besides just making drinks. Mm. I was training a team. I was like running a concept. And that's what I really, really enjoyed. The conceptual aspect of hospitality and all those dimensions, not just like slinging drinks and getting people drunk and seeing if they're like being too much of a problem and you know, and dealing with like the difficult people. So there was that moment of just like, I wish I could say, I wish I had something to offer your listeners in terms of how I overcame that. Yeah. But I basically just quit and got offered the right opportunity and it happened to work out. Yeah. And that was very fortunate. Mm. But what I did was when I got the new opportunity, I found what I loved about it. Yeah. That was beyond the stuff that wasn't giving me inspiration. Mm. And I put my attention on some like higher level skills.
Yeah.
Of management of all that stuff.
Yeah.
And that really, that got me really into things. And then but then a year and a half into that, I was living a glamorous life. I was in Singapore Cosmopolitan magazine.
Oh, wow.
And this series on like cute bartenders. And they're like asking like leaders of the bar industry. And they're like asking me like what kind of girls I like to date. Like it was like really, it was really pop star.
Yeah. Sounds like it.
And it was really great. It was like a real job. And I really felt like a grown up and I really felt like I could do it forever actually at that point. And then I went to India and I hung out with some meditation teachers and some people that were really hardcore into it. It was for a retreat and I went to the Kumbh Mela, which is a festival that is the largest human gathering on the planet on the Ganga River.
Wow.
where every single, like anybody into anything spiritual and devout comes out of the woodwork and like congregates at the most insane, like think Burning Man minus all the like, you know, hipsters, like times a trillion. That's Kumbh Mela.
Wow.
And it was there and in talking to teachers and stuff that I realized that it's time to be a teacher and to stop fooling myself.
Wow.
And to stop thinking I can't do it because I'm this hospitality person that's only capable of hospitality. And that's a very easy thing to condition yourself with in this industry. Mm-hmm. And it was getting out of it and talking to people that, you know, spiritual authorities that, yeah, made me say, of course I can do this. Yeah. So then that's what I did. I left and that's when I went to India and did all that.
Cool.
So it was kind of this like really funny, like stop, start, and then total switch
up. Wow. Awesome. I think it's a great response. You know, I think the best we can hope for in other people's journey is just to hear how it has worked for them. And it's not a one size fits all, you know. It's not a one size fits all experience, you know, of figuring all this stuff out. And so, thank you for sharing that. I love it.
Absolutely.
I keep having this vision of you before embarking on this transformative journey, and it just the way you describe yourself as, you know, having a hard time talking to people and such. Like, I have such a hard time imagining that. From what I've experienced of you and of your work, I'm so curious. I don't know. This feels like it might be like either this is a great question or like a total ridiculous question. But I'm just so curious if you could imagine yourself years ago, before really embarking on this journey, coming into your restaurant as a customer, like. I'm just curious what your experience, like what that would feel like, what you would say, if there's anything that comes to you. And like I said, this might be like the worst question I could ever ask on a podcast interview. And if so, then I'll just edit this part out. But also just, I don't know, it just keeps coming to me here.
That's fantastic. No, I love that you're asking a question that like you wouldn't normally, or you're not, that's great. That's like the stuff of like great podcasts, being a podcaster myself.
Well, we'll see. We'll see.
We'll see. So your question is like spastic, immature Stefan. What does he look like as like a hospitality professional who's like trying to like trying to
or just like if like I think I'm more curious about your like what this Stefan would experience of that Stefan, like
oh, right now, I see. So I'm going in there
one way or the other. I don't know who's on which side of the table, you know, but
yeah,
it just seems like such a big transformation that you've been through. I think I was just looking for a different way to kind of process that.
Yeah, I would see, I mean, you know, like you would probably see someone who had a quirky like charm to them, mm-hmm. maybe like an eccentricity, though spastic and like a humor and wit, perhaps, you know, that generally makes that generally can like gloss over the difficulty, you know, that they have to connect. And a lot of the time, like you might go somewhere and be served by mm-hmm. someone like this, or in life, you might meet someone like this where they might be articulate. They might know their stuff, but you're not necessarily left with a sense that you really, that they really even knew you were there, so to speak, right? Like they, you know, they could have been speaking into the middle distance. That's why, like, that's why I think like podcasting is dangerous for me, because I can just speak into nowhere really easily. like, because I do podcasts where a lot of episodes where I'm just talking, just me for an hour, because I do that very easily. Like, and so there's this like ease of soapboxing that people might be like wooed by for a minute, but like no one necessarily remembers either. And that doesn't really like live in people. What lives in people is when you really see them and when you really listen to them and when you really bring out the best parts of them. And that's, and I realized that when I would go out to bars that I really liked and I would sit at them and the bartender would just make me feel good about being who I am. And I didn't even give a crap what I was drinking. You know, I didn't care that the drinks were good, which is so funny. I was so obsessed with good drinks. and then my mentors were like, oh, really? Then think about a place where you go for the drinks. And I'm like, oh, crap. You got me there. And think about a place you go just to have the bartender like tell you how smart they are. No one seeks that. No one seeks that. The people will endure that, but they won't seek it. And that's what I think people were, you know, maybe enduring a bit and might have enjoyed for a minute, sure. But I just don't think I offered that sort of ground level ability to actually receive someone for who they are openly, you know, without judgment and without a need to just talk about myself too. I would see someone extremely, extremely self-absorbed. And which it's such a powerful impulse in myself and so many people that that it is, I'm still overcoming it sometimes. And I have compassion for people because I see it. So I can see it. I can go to like a bar or restaurant, I can pick that out in a second. So like a bartender that's wrapped up in themselves. And I can go there and I instantly know if someone is being like attentive and mindful. Like if you feel it right away, right? So but that helps in having compassion.
I love it. That's a great response. Thanks for enduring my random questions out of my curiosities. It's great.
Oh no, totally. Like, I mean, that's, I'll play. Yeah. You can throw anything at me. I'll play jazz with it. It might not even involve answering the question, but it'll just have me rambling.
I love it. Well, when it comes to, I feel like we've kind of circled around this really, really, really well, but just want to kind of hit it head on. Like when is your work like at its best for you?
Which work?
That's a great question.
My education, like I guess there's many prongs of kind of.
I would say let's put it into let's look at two aspects of it. One is Serve Conscious, which I do want to hear a little bit more about, you know, about the project as a whole. But your work with Serve Conscious as well as hospitality.
Yeah, so let's start with hospitality, I guess. In that environment, you know, you're always looking to be like in a state of flow, you know, like you know, Csikszentmihalyi, like positive psychology describes it. That's like hospitality is the ultimate crucible of finding flow states, where you are unconflicted inside, you know, and like you can't make a mistake. And even if you do make a mistake, it bounces off of your like armor. I am in my like power zone, in an empowered place of service. Not meaning I have power over people, but I have like power over my negative self. And I have a place, an empowered place from which I'm serving that gives power to others around me. you know, and if someone were to talk down to me, it would be like if I was, I often give this example, it'd be like if I was like a benevolent billionaire person, you know, and I was like just serving tables to have fun. That's how I would feel, you know, like I'm like, what? I was like, you can talk down to me, but I'm already a king among men. And I don't look down on you, but you're not going to bring my status down because I'm strictly here. I don't even have a dog in the fight. I don't need this job. I don't feel tethered to it. I don't feel obligated to it. I'm here because I love it, and I love what the moment can provide. That's the flow state where I feel like I'm the king of my of my flow state. You know,
I love it. I love it. And then. Tell me about Serve Conscious and maybe both, you know, your hopes there as well as like, when is that at its best for you?
Yeah. I wonder if the project, it's relatively new, you know, I've got like, 27 podcast episodes and a few blog entries that have kind of taken the backseat to the podcasting. Cause it's like the conversational aspect of it is just, has been so enriching for me to have guests on my show, like yourself and so many wonderful, inspiring people that have kind of been interested in the project and spoken to me and having conversations like in that context with that kind of intent has been just so like, it's just been so energizing, life-giving. That's awesome. And and that aspect of it, in addition to also like just teaching, because I just love teaching and I love just like sitting down and not even like knowing exactly what I'm going to talk about. And I just kind of go and then all of a sudden I have like an hour of content because like I can just get so wrapped up. It's not wrapped up. I feel a certain freedom within this project to not feel like I have all the answers either. Like it's kind of it's kind of an in process thing. So like before when I was teaching meditation, I would sit down in front of a group of people and I kind of had this anxiety, like this like subtle anxiety even. And it's an anxiety that was basically like worsening itself because as a meditation teacher, you're not even supposed to have anxiety. You're supposed to be like this calm, fulfilled person, which none are, by the way. That's like that's just to let you in on like an industry secret. but I definitely wasn't that. And I had this sort of like, I have to still evoke that or else like people aren't going to trust me. But with this project, there's kind of like everything is just like in process learning. And in fact, keeping it like that makes everything I'm teaching that much more like real and credible because it's like unfinished. It has to be every like big spiritual or self-betterment or like any skill I'm teaching isn't really a skill until it's being tested properly. And some of the stuff I'll be talking about, I might have thought I knew, but like the service environment is recontextualizing it and giving me new lessons on it. So I'm just kind of like, I can sit down and I can talk about these things and talk about it in a way that's kind of vulnerable and incomplete. And I think that's more helpful for myself and for people who worry about having to aspire to something. It's not just take something and like run into walls with it as I'm doing.
I love it.
And so that's that part of the project, but I'm like, I want to have more like actual, I think it will be at its best when there are more courses and more just actual, like really structured material, which I'm working on. And I'm thinking of keeping everything free, like absolutely everything free. I don't even know if I want to monetize it. I think I might monetize something else and just make this literally my act of service. Yeah. And it can just point people to something paid that will involve more my own sort of consultation. Or I just might want to take money from large corporations and not like individual people. So that's kind of where it's at right now. It's just, I just want content that nourishes people.
I love it so much. Well, I'll definitely link up to your work there in the show notes. Just as we kind of, you know, move towards wrapping up here, if anyone's listening and just feels really, you know, inspired by your work and wants to follow along with you, is there any, you know, besides the Serve Conscious site, is there anything in particular you'd like to invite people to?
My social account is actually, I'm revving it up. And also, because I'm going to be doing this thing now, I'm going to be posting it daily called Mindful Ninja Moves. It's like a 1 minute.
I love the sound of it.
It's like a, absolutely. Because, you know, you're in the battlefield, whether it's the like service industry or your whatever challenging life, you need ninja moves, you know, you need like, you're going to be confronted with difficulty and you need to like dial into something that's centering and empowering. Mm-hmm. So this is it's like a 1 minute, like shot of like some mindful skill or principle or practice.
Love it.
And that's going up on my Instagram, and I'm developing it as an Alexa briefing, like an Alexa skill.
Love that.
And a Google. Yeah.
Very cool. So, I love that you're incorporating with technology. Very, very cool. I'll make sure to link up to your Instagram for folks as well.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Sounds like a lot of fun. I'll look forward personally to following along, because that sounds like the kind of thing I'd really enjoy.
Great. Yeah. Thank you. I'm curious about your thoughts on it. It's just kind of a new thing I'm doing. I can't believe I'm actually compressing like stuff I normally ramble on about for an hour down to a minute. It's only a minute. It'll never be longer.
This sounds like a great discipline. Sounds really tough, actually.
It is, yeah. But it's fun and liberating in its own way. Yeah.
Awesome, awesome. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. Really just appreciate your work, appreciate you, appreciate just what you're offering the world. So thank you also for doing what you do.
Thanks, Dan. Thank you. And I feel the same. That's why I was courting you to be on my show. You know, if more people just thought about meaning and bringing meaning and purpose, or at least like thinking about those questions in a real way, like you are, like it could really just change the
world.
Thank
you. Well, absolutely. Likewise. So love that we've been able to connect. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Thanks, Dan. Thanks.
Thank you, Stefan, so much for your time. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in with us. And I hope this conversation has been as helpful and inspiring for you as it has been for me. If you'd like to check out Stefan's work, please check out the show notes at themeaningmovement.com/Stefan, STEFAN. If you wouldn't mind just taking a quick moment to leave a rating or review for this podcast, wherever you get your podcast, I would be just so appreciative. That is how people like yourself find a podcast like this. Our music, as always, is by Tom Roram. Our artwork is by Eleazar Ruiz. Thank you so much for listening. I'll be back in your earbuds or speakers shortly. Take care.